Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Education, Disabilities, and Accommodation Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On February 22, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Frye v. Napoleon Community Schools, a dispute involving the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA, which in exchange for federal funding requires that states provide a free, appropriate public education to children with certain disabilities. EF, a child who has a severe form of cerebral palsy, was assisted in various daily activities by her service dog, Wonder. Officials at Ezra Ebbe Elementary School, however, refused to allow Wonder to join EF in kindergarten, so her parents, the Fries, proceeded to homeschool her instead. They also filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Civil Rights, OCR, alleging that the exclusion of EF's service dog violated federal disabilities laws, including Title II of the Americans with Disability Act and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. OCR sided with the Fries, and Ezra Ebbe relented. Concerned about possible resentment from Ezra Ebbe officials, however, the Fries instead enrolled EF in a different elementary school that had welcomed Wonder. The Fries also filed suit against Ezra Ebbe's local and regional school districts and principal in federal district court, seeking declaratory and monetary relief for the alleged violations of Title II and Section 504. The district court dismissed the suits on the ground that the Fries had failed first to exhaust administrative procedures available under the IDEA, as required by Section 1415 of that law. A divided panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit affirmed, concluding that Section 1415's exhaustion requirement applies whenever the plaintiff's alleged harms are educational in nature. The Supreme Court, however, granted cert to address confusion in the courts of appeals as to the scope of Section 1415's exhaustion requirement. By a vote of 8-0, the court vacated the judgment of the Sixth Circuit and remanded the case. In an opinion delivered by Justice Kagan, the court held that exhaustion of the administrative procedures established by the IDEA is unnecessary when the gravamen of the plaintiff's suit is something other than the denial of the IDEA's core guarantee of a free, appropriate public education. The court then remanded the case to the Sixth Circuit for application of that standard to the Fry's complaint in the first instance. Is their complaint fundamentally about denial of a free, appropriate public education, or about something else? Justice Kagan's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Breyer, and Sotomayor. Justice Alito filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in judgment, in which Justice Thomas joined. And now, to discuss the case, we have Daniel Woodring, principal at Woodring Law Firm.
Today we are discussing the recent Supreme Court case in the education sector, Frye versus Napoleon Community Schools. This decision was a unanimous decision with 8 justices. Justice Kagan wrote the opinion, and there was a concurrence by Alito in which Thomas joined. The question before the court was a question of statutory interpretation. It was a question of an interpretation of IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Educational Act, and a question of to what extent there's a requirement for the exhaustion of administrative remedies under that act. The case that gave rise to the Supreme Court decision came out of Michigan, and you had a family with an elementary school age daughter with cerebral palsy. She had a trained service animal named Wonder, a golden doodle, and her parents requested that she have the opportunity to use this animal at the school that she was in. The school considered the request and denied the request, determining that they already provided a full-time human assistant for the child, and as such, they could provide FAPE without allowing the dog as also an assistant to the child. Well, the parents went ahead and filed a complaint with the Office of Civil Rights, OCR, and OCR didn't really get much into the question of FAPE, a free appropriate public education, which is the standard under IDEA, but said, Well, even if you're providing FAPE, you could still be violating Section 504 or Title II of the ADA and found, in effect, that that's what the district was doing in this situation. So the parents decided to go ahead and file a complaint in district court, not raising any claims under FAPE, but arguing under both Section 504 and Title II that the district had violated their daughter's rights. The district defended, and the court dismissed, finding that the exhaustion requirements under the requirements of IDEA had not been met. The Sixth Circuit, in effect, affirmed that the exhaustion requirements had not been met, finding that basically the relief requested was related to the education that the daughter was receiving. So this case then comes up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the question is, when does there have to be an exhaustion of remedies? The statutory provision at issue in this case provides that nothing in the IDEA shall be construed to restrict or limit the rights, procedures, and remedies available under the Constitution, the ADA, Title V of the Rehabilitation Act, including Section 504, or other federal laws protecting the rights of children with disabilities, except that before filing of a civil action under such law seeking relief that is also available under the IDEA, the IDEA's administrative procedure shall be exhausted to the same extent as would be required had the action been brought under the IDEA. The court determined that the only relief that an IDEA officer can give, hence the thing a plaintiff must seek in order to trigger Section 1415L's exhaustion rule, is relief for the denial of a FAPE. The court went on to say that when you're trying to determine whether a plaintiff seeks relief for denial of a FAPE, that you have to look not so much at the labels used, but at the substance, the crux of the complaint that's made. They said ignore artful pleading. Then, once the actual claims are identified, you have to ask two hypothetical questions. Now, the court framed them as hypothetical questions, but I think that this is actually what the test coming out of this case will be considered to be. The questions are, first, could the plaintiff have brought essentially the same claim if the alleged conduct had occurred at a public facility that was not a school, say a public theater or a library? And second, could an adult at the school, say an employee or visitor, have pressed essentially the same grievance? So what the court's attempting to say here is, okay, if this is a claim that could be brought without regard to it being a child in an educational setting, then we're going to say there's not a requirement for the exhaustion of administrative remedies. And they gave a couple examples of answers to their hypothetical questions. Suppose you have a child that's in a wheelchair and he wants ramps to access his public school. Well, they said you could characterize that as an educational-related denial, but that would be the same kind of denial for access to a theater, access to any other area of public education or public accommodation. And so they said that if you're looking at that situation, that would not require the exhaustion of administrative remedies. A contrary example they gave then was, suppose you have a student who seeks math tutoring, and he may be seeking this as a reasonable accommodation, but he's seeking math tutoring. And using the analysis they just set out, they said, well, the child would be unlikely to seek math tutoring from, say, a movie theater, and an adult would be unlikely to seek math tutoring. So we're going to find that that's something that's really kind of core to the free appropriate public education and the remedies under that, and that would require the exhaustion of administrative remedies. Of note, the court did drop a footnote, footnote 4, in which they said, we're leaving a question open today. They said the question of whether exhaustion is required when the plaintiff complains of the denial of a FAPE, but the specific remedy she requests, here, money damages for emotional distress, is not one that an IDEA hearing officer may award. So that particular question, they said, we're leaving that open if, in effect, the damages requested are not something that would be available under FAPE. They did not answer that question in this case. So from a practitioner perspective, it's worth knowing that that's still an open question. Justice Alito, in his concurrence, which Thomas joined, was not enamored of the examples and questions that were given, referring to them as, quote, several misleading clues. And going on further to explain that these clues make sense only if there is no overlap between the relief available under the following sets of claims. And to a certain extent, that's correct in that if relief is available not only under IDEA, but relief is available under Section 504 or Title II, it's not going to be as clear of an answer as to whether you have to exhaust the administrative remedies. Alito also went on and discussed, and I think probably while I would agree with his first point, I would totally agree with his second point, and this would be the point that looking at the course of litigation, he says, this clue also seems to me to be ill-advised. And it is easy to imagine circumstances under which parents might start down the IDEA road and then change course and file an action under the ADA or the Rehabilitation Act that seeks relief that the IDEA cannot provide. I think that point is very well taken, because when you're looking at the course of litigation, particularly when you're looking at formal requests for relief under IDEA, parents are often not represented by attorneys in that process. In fact, they're advocates that represent, or they're parents that are pro se. So I think looking at that as a clue to whether the relief being sought should require the exhaustion of administrative remedies or not will be much more hassle than it's worth. Although it's worth noting that the court took that seriously, because that was basically the basis upon which this case was remanded. They said they did not have a record in front of them to address that in this case, and so they remanded it for that consideration as to whether that would have an impact on this specific case. So, bringing this discussion of Wonder the Golden Doodle in for a landing, what is the significance of this case? Well, first, it's always important to remember that when we're dealing with matters of statutory interpretation, the legislature, or, you know, Congress, if they get their act together, can definitely take action. It's not as though it's a constitutional provision where you have to get a court decision to change it. So that's always an option. But I think in this case, we're not really going to know the impact until a number of cases work their way through the lower courts. There's still a lot of balancing, a lot of weighing that needs to be done as to whether a case will be considered to be within the core IDEA relief that's being requested, or it's going to be something whereby you don't have to exhaust administrative remedies and can bring a case outside of that. So while the court attempted to set some clear lines, I think in reality, we're not really going to know how these cases break until we've had a number of years and a number of cases that are moving through the system. I do think for practitioners, it's going to make a difference if you're going to look at the course of litigation as to how they advise represented parents to approach the district up front, whether they're going to be seeking relief under IDEA or seeking relief under another provision. Because as has been pointed out, the damages are different under those provisions. And sometimes you can only get realistic relief under something other than IDEA, depending on the nature of the claim.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play, for an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events. Please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.